Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, my name is VexX, and this is the Vex on Vex podcast, episode number 40. Now, if you have been listening for the past, I guess, 40 weeks technically, or 40 hours, you've heard a wide variation and a wide variety of topics discussed. There isn't really anything linear in reference to the Vex on Vex podcast, but I am recording this on January the 8th of 2019, correct? So 2019, here we are. It's Happy New Year, as they say. And this is a bizarre, bizarre episode. And you have no idea what I'm talking about. So allow me to explain, if you will. I've been a musician. It turns out, since January 5th, 1991 was the first time we ever had a band practice, which you would ask me, why, Vex, would you know such a thing? I was on the interwebs, and I was experimenting, and I found equipment which is not expensive and it's not really rare that can transform your reel-to-reel cassettes that we used to have back in the 80s and the 90s and put them in a digital format. So I got curious and I ordered one and it arrived at my house and I opened it up and I went and I went through my archives of recordings that we've had for Starscream and The Broken, and there was a band called Leroy Spoon in there at one time. And ironically enough, I came across the original tape of a band called Reign of Terror, which I guess formed technically in 1990. And this is what happened. My best friend growing up, his name was Steve. My name's Vex. And we had a kid named Matt, went to high school with. And for reasons I don't really comprehend, we named him T-Bone, which he liked. So that was a positive thing. So for Christmas that year, I remember that Steve went to his mom and dad and he was like, listen, get me an electric guitar. I need one. I'm going to learn how to play. This is going to happen. I'm getting my band together. I went to my parents. I'm like, get me a bass, please. And I'm left-handed. So it was like a left-handed bass, right? A little more expensive. And then T-Bone, or Matt, went and he went to his parents and they got him an electric guitar. So we all get together post-Christmas. I believe the date was January the 5th and it was 1991. And it was our first quote-unquote band practice, right? But I was like 15 years old. Like, I was little. And I was dumb and I didn't understand anything about anything. And I was just happy to be with my friends. And I think we were in my parents' basement, which we no longer own that property. We sold it to someone, a friend of the family, ironically enough. And so I came across this tape and it's beyond cringeworthy. Like, it's so upsetting. And I guess in my little tiny Vex brain, even back then, I was like, no, man, eventually I'm going to be an important musician and I'll be broadcasting and I'll need these archives. And it's, if I'm completely honest with you guys, if I listen back to it, we're like children, you know? We're like, I guess it's pubescent, not prepubescent, because you can kind of hear like our voices are kind of changing, but I don't even sound like a person. We sound like Beavis and Butthead. That's what we sound like. We sound like Beavis and Butthead trying to discuss band practice. And my friend was playing little tiny riffs, which weren't that good, you know, but we were just grateful. And I was trying to like organize shit even back then. I was like, no, man, like this riff's better than that riff. And we're going to write a song about it, blah, blah, blah. And I had spent that entire summer leading up to that, learning how to write lyrics and writing lyrics. And the irony is that by, I guess, a year later, a year after this recording, the band I got into, which became Apathy, which was my high school band, air quotes, and we actually played and stuff and wrote songs and rehearsed for years. And they're still together. They're called Stellar Belly. Still dear friends of mine. I don't see them often because as you get older, people, you grow apart. But the bottom line is that, like, this is the actual beginning of this little tiny musical career that I've had. And the only reason, you know, that you even listen or even know that this podcast might exist is because we're in a little band called Starscream. And thank God you listen. I really do appreciate it. I want to be completely upfront with that. I didn't foresee ever having a platform of this. Like, I was thinking about how I was going to start this podcast while I was driving here. I went to the gym today and then I went to lunch and I'm like, yeah, I just got to do it. It's like, it is. It's very cringe-worthy. I have to stress that to you. Like, you'll laugh and that'll be awesome, but I'm going to be embarrassed because it's so bad. So on today's podcast, we're going to play you a recording from 1991, January of 91, ironically enough, which, let's do some math, right? So 2019, this is 28 years ago. This is me 28 fucking years ago trying to get my little band together that eventually became Starscream and, you know, toured, made records. We have a new record coming out in 2019 called Weapons that we're currently working on or completing. I don't know, man. It's fucking scary. Like, if you make a podcast, everybody's kind of like, well, Joe Rogan's like the Johnny Carson of the podcast universe, you know, and you kind of aspire to be on that level someday. I just couldn't imagine Joe Rogan conjuring audio tapes of himself 28 years ago. And he's like, hey, like we're literally Beavis and Butthead. And Beavis and Butthead didn't even exist yet, actually. We were just fucking kids, man. And we were in my parents' basement and like eating junk food and like really trying to get a band together. So if nothing else, this clip, and I only think it's a few minutes, it's so bad though. So we're going to play that. After that, I started taking bass lessons because I finally had a bass guitar, and my bass teacher at the time, whose name was Patrick, he went to England. I wanted him to be a rock star. He like left and he like moved away and he joined a band over there and he was doing really well. He had a four track. So before he left, I was like, yo, I think I want to sing. And he's like, all right, we're going to cut a song, you know, but you're playing the bass because I'm your bass teacher and I'll play the guitar. And we had like a drum machine and it's called Too Much to Take, which started out as a ballad when I wrote it called Too Little Too Late. But we fucked it all up, and I couldn't sing, you know. It was like literally like the first time I think I had ever like really projected in any capacity. It's not bad, and I played it for our manager, for Starstream's manager, and he was like, "No, man, it's better than you think it is." No, it's fucking horseshit. And then there's some other stuff where there's like some beats, and I'm doing really bad poetry. So we might play that for you, and then if we get to it, if I don't die of motherfucker embarrassment, by the way, we're gonna share with you an audio recording of the band Apathy, and I'm going to send that tape or a copy of it digitally to my friend Armand, who was the bass player in that band, because he wanted to hear it. I posted about it on Facebook, and he's like, oh my God, send me the thing, you know? So I'm here. We're recording the Vex on Vex podcast. This is episode number 40. I'm by myself because I got to be honest, I couldn't even fathom or imagine having to bring another person in and force them or subject them to listen to this. And then, of course, we're going to share it with thousands of people on a podcast, which doesn't make a great deal of sense either. I don't know, man. This is just, if we had a title of every episode, which Johnny Zero from the TV Dads Wrestling podcast is always like, we have to title the episode, man. I don't really believe in that. But if we were to title episode number 40 of the Vex on Vex podcast, this is called Cringeworthy. That's the title of this fucking episode. So thank you for listening. Hopefully you'll get through it. It's bad, man. It's kids just trying. And I don't know. I feel like you have to be a little bit brave. You got to really stick it out there. And just got to share with your audience. So I'm trying to. So bear with us. I'm going to click over and we're going to play. I can't talk over it. I wish I could. The audio system doesn't allow me to. So you have to listen to the whole thing. It's only a few minutes of really big guitar riffs. Then we'll come back and, you know, I'll cry because it was so embarrassing. And then we'll continue along. So thank you. And please bear with us.
Yo. All right. It's January 5th, 1991. T-Bone just bought his guitar this afternoon. And we are taping our first melody. Anyway.
All right, Bob.
Do the first one.
Hold on a second.
Alright, play the
pick
bass
up,
loud.
Wait, I'm gonna pick the tempo up a little.
Alright, try the other one, please. That's the best one. Alright, Soffer's like, I'm gonna
No show. Thanks to me who's playing it, it's good. Thank you.
Dude, Steve, it's excellent. Alright, listen, for the record, the one that I like, I don't know, he likes, and I think the one you like, is the bass string and the high string.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool.
Alright, now let me try this. This is gonna be the beginning of a cowboy song when we get the lyrics right.
Ready?
Here it goes.
Oh, that was so painful. My God. Like, so there's a myriad of emotions and thoughts that are crashing through my brain as you're listening to this awkward recording of a 15-year-old me from literally 1,000 years ago, 28 to be precise. And so that's the first band practice. That's like, we called it Reign of Terror. And I remember that I joined the high school band right after I got my bass, because I finally had a bass and I was going to be a bass player. And they gave me like a little drum instruction, which is really cool, actually, because I learned things I didn't comprehend before. And inside of my band locker, I had this giant handmade poster, or not poster, I guess. I don't know. a piece of paper that we drew Reign of Terror. Like, I sketched it all out. R-O-T. Rot. Reign of Terror with three dots and shit. And it was awful. And the guy, you know, down the way, also in the bass core or whatever we were for the school band, was named Armin. And Armin was awesome. And he was a really good bass player. And I was not. I was an atrocious bass player. And he actually practiced, and I didn't comprehend such things. But I kept writing songs, which I guess is a plus. But I want to say, like, I'm listening back to that audio, and I want to die, right? I'm fucking bossy then. Like, I'm bossy. I know I'm bossy. And if you know me at all, you probably have picked up that I'm bossy. But even at 15, I'm all like, no, this, we do this. This is how the band works and blah, blah, blah. And I think you like this. And it was fucking atrocious. But it's literally an audio document of what it's like to start a fucking band. Like, from the inception of it, like, it was just a concept in the beginning. I was a huge, like, hair metal fan and heavy metal fan, and I really enjoyed that shit. Motley Crue was fantastically important to me at that time. They had a huge record literally right then and there called Dr. Feelgood they were touring on. They had been on the road for, like, 2 years. Well, I don't know if it was 2 years, actually. Let me do some math. They're, like, a year and a half in, because that record comes out in, like, August of 89, they hit the road, and then 90 happens. Now we're in early part of 91, so they're like a year and a half into their touring, I guess. Yeah, that makes sense. But they were complaining about it. Anyway, I don't know why I'm going down that fucking tangent. The point is, there's us beginning trying to be banned. Ironically enough, the guy we're calling T-Bone, whose name was Matt, who I met in high school, really nice kid, actually, he didn't pursue music in any capacity, but Steven went on, and he actually built his own projects and, like, became kind of a force in like, the digital format of music, or I'm probably saying it incorrectly, but like Nine Inch Nails, industrial, that's the way you would describe it. So this whole industrial wave thing that happens in the 90s, Steven was like right there, and he still plays guitar, and like he owns equipment and everything, but he became a really good programmer. He could make beats, and he could just build tracks out of thin air, things that I just were above my head. And he became a really good songwriter too, and he has records out, and he's doing his own thing. We don't even talk anymore, but he's still making music, and that's awesome. And then, you know, he got me, and fuck, man, like, that's it. It was January 5th, 1991. Like, this is before Nirvana even happened. Like, the world scape of music was radically different then than it even would be just a few months later. Like, it was like, it was a big deal, and it was a transition, and it was heavy, and I was there. I was at the forefront of it. And then after this happens, I remember vividly I was taking bass lessons because Guns N' Roses had their follow-up, their like double album to Appetite for Destruction, which was called Use Your Illusion, and it comes out in September of 1991. This is the same month that Nirvana comes out, you know what I mean? And the MTV Music Awards, and when I was 15, for some reason, they were vastly important, like the most important thing in the world. Like, I'm like, oh, the MTV Music Awards, oh, so important. You would watch it every year. It got really bad as the 90s progressed, by the way, and I think they still exist. I don't really know. I mean, does anyone watch MTV for music? I don't know. From what I was told from the younger generation, all the videos are on, you know, YouTube, so you just watch them there, or Vimeo, or whatever it is. So, they were really important, we would watch it, and Guns N' Roses puts out this giant record, and I remember I only had so much money at the time. I was probably a paper boy, maybe not. Yeah, I think I was. I was either a paper boy or I was a bus boy, I forget. Some menial task that you do when you're in high school, and I didn't have a lot of money, and I was like, all right, I can't take bass lessons this week because I had to pay for them. They were expensive. I remember paying like $40 for like a session. I think it was like $20 an hour to learn how to play bass, which was like astronomical when you're a kid. Like $20 an hour, it's amazing, you know? Because this is back in 1991. So I had bass lessons, which ironically enough were not very far from where I live now, which blows my fucking mind. It was off of Haldeman Avenue in an apartment complex that's still there. So I would take like 35 buses. It would take me hours to get there. I'd show up. He'd be kind of lit. He's like, hey, what's up, man? Let's do some bass stuff. And he's like, did you practice? And of course I'd lie. Oh, I practiced. I didn't practice. I sucked. And he would teach me some lines. And I'd be like, oh, can you teach me like, so I'm going on a tangent. I apologize. The same day Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 come out, Ozzy Osbourne puts out No More Tears. And I was an Ozzy fan because I had adored Sabbath, which I'm sure I've talked about ad nauseum on this podcast. But I really did like Sabbath. And I got that record that day. And I remember we were on the bus, me and Steve Gambian, ironically enough, coming back from Tower Records in Northeast Philly, which is where we went to get the records the day they came out. I couldn't go to bass lessons that week, so I had to buy records. And I bought three. So I bought Use Your Illusion 1, Use Your Illusion 2, and the No More Tears record. And No More Tears was so much better to me at the time. Like, I've since become a massive supporter of the Use Your Illusion records. But at the time, like, it opens up with No More Tears, and I went to my bass lesson that next week, and I'm like, can you please teach me this bass line? Right? And I can still play that bass line to this day, actually, which is pretty fucking cool for someone who's an awful bass player. But yes, that was the first time. It was early 91, January 5th, to be precise. And we did that for a few months. We banged around. We tried to be a band. I don't think we ever actually got through a physical, real practice where songs were constructed, because we were just kids and we were trying to figure it out. And I remember that my family was not okay with us having amplifiers in the basement. We had amps. Like, I had a little tiny combo amp. I think we all had combo amps. They were like, listen, you can't do this. You're shaking the whole house and blah, blah, blah. And there's, I think, a tape where I'm trying to practice bass. And I discovered if you turn my amp a certain way, it distorted a little and sounded, you know, kind of like Cliff Burton-ish. You know what I mean? Which is, you know, everybody loves Cliff Burton, great bass player. And I was like, doing this little tiny riff over and over again, trying to write something. And my dad comes down, and the tape player is rolling. And he's like, that's not music. Turn that shit off. Blah, blah, blah. I kind of want to find that and then put it on a record, because we have a new record coming out. I'd be like, there's my dad yelling at me, telling me I can't play bass, which fucked me all up, which made me a singer. Ha. So I guess it's his fault. I don't know. So that was, it was awkward. So we're going to graduate to the next level and the next layer. And what happened is the bass teacher, before he moved to England to try and be a professional rock star, which was awesome, by the way, he had a four track. And he was like, listen, we'll make a demo and it's cool. And, you know, you pay me or whatever. And I just paying him for my time. Like, I'd go there and I'd give him like $40 every week. And we'd just hang out and he would teach me stuff. And it was cool. And I didn't do drugs. I didn't drink or anything. I'm sure he would have if I asked. But he was a really cool older guy. And he lived with his girlfriend who was really attractive. And I was impressed by these things because I was a kid. And we recorded this song together, and I made a little intro for it, which you're going to hear. And the name of the track, again, is Too Much to Take. Now, on the back end, you haven't heard the track yet. I'm going to let the whole thing play, even though I'm going to cringe all the way through it, because it's fucking awkward, man. It's bad, but it's the beginning. And I remember I took this cassette tape, which was my single. This is the Vex single, right? I'm going to build a fucking band around this. And I had an older friend, I guess a year ahead of me in high school, and his name was going by, was Dusty. And I've been trying to think of Dusty's real name recently, and I have no fucking idea. That's okay, though. Oh, I'm a liar. I think it might be Chris. Yes. Anyway, Dusty said, hey, man, if you go to Northeast Philadelphia, there is a place called Champions Arcade. And arcades are awesome, but, you know, you never have enough money to hang out in an arcade for a long period of time. But there's girls there, and there were games there. And we went, and he was like, listen, man, we're going to go to this arcade and you're going to bring your demo and you're going to have your Walkman and I'm going to introduce you to musicians and you're going to fucking play it and you're going to put a band together. And it was really cool because he was kind of like our first de facto manager, for real. We had a falling out over something bizarre, which I might share later because I did something really dumb, but kids do dumb shit. And anyway, so Dusty and I get on the bus. We meet at Champions at the Roosevelt Boulevard. And we played this fucking song for someone. His name was Chris Freaks, who I'm still fucking kind of friends with because we're both in the industry together. I'm a roofer. He's a brick pointer. We trade work off once in a while. Really nice guy. Beautiful wife. Beautiful daughter that one of my old bass players now teaches how to play guitar, which is just a weird, sad, not sad, but weird way the world works, you know? And that, to the best of my knowledge, they're all really still friends. And that girl's becoming a very good guitar player and rock and roll, as they say. But Chris was my first lead guitar player in my first real band. Like, Reign of Terror, we tried. I really wanted to be a band. We never got a drummer. We never got songs off the ground. I wrote and wrote and wrote myriad of lyrics. And I wasn't that good with the melodies yet, but I was getting there. And I feel bad because the Too Much to Take song started out as like a ballad. So, fuck it, here we go. The way I wanted it to be was, too little, too late, I said you're breaking my heart. Too little, too late, you're tearing me apart. Right? In my head, it was like orchestral and beautiful, but that's not how things happen. So we go in and I'm like, all right, I got this little riff and I got this tune. And I think it was like three notes or something. And he made it better and he made a better bass line and he made a little guitar line. And this guy, Pat, my bass teacher, and he created a drum loop and we cut a little track, but we sped it up, right? So it became Too Much to Take. You know what I mean? Like, hey, how you doing? Ah. Because I couldn't sing. Still can, I guess, but I try. So we're gonna put you on hold momentarily here, and we're going to play you the first demo recorded in September of 1991, which is the same month the Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 come out, the same month that Ozzy Osbourne's No More Tears comes out, and it's the same month that Nirvana releases Nevermind. Not that anyone cared yet, but by fucking Christmas, man, the world was theirs. So bear with us, and you're going to hear Vex. And you want to hear something amazingly funny? My stage name is VexX. That's my stage name. Back then, at the tender age of 15, my stage name was Vex Bedlam. Which, you know, not very sophisticated, but it sounded punk rock and I dug it. So I was Vex Bedlam. And this is the Vex Bedlam single of Too Much to Take. Bear with us.
We're now beginning the darkness, touching reality and falling from finale, walking and talking, kicking and stalking. Let us begin, my friend.
It's repetitive, it's redundant, and then my ad-libs at the end are just beyond atrocious. But how sophisticated can you be at 15? And I guess it's not that bad. I don't know, man. It's pretty fucking bad. But that's my first recorded song ever. Like, ever. And I remember that I wrote this huge ballad. And I was like, I want to write it for my girlfriend. And it was this blonde little girl who lived in Kensington. And I remember meeting her parents, and they were like literally just like, not to be the meanest person ever, but they were just like drunks and they were like not clean and they lived in a really shitty environment. And I was like, in my head, I'm like, I live in a nice neighborhood. I don't know why I'm here. Oh yeah, because you're really hot. And then we had a fight and I went to fucking my bass teacher and I'm like, hey man, I kind of wrote this song for my girlfriend and I kind of want to make it a tune. But he was the musician. He was in a local band in Philadelphia called Octababy. And Octababy was one of the house bands at a place called J.C. Dobbs, which became the Pontiac Grill, and now it was the legendary Dobbs. It's now defunct. It's closed. But it was there for 40 fucking years or more. And we were the house band on that stage in the summer of 2002, leading up to our first European tour. So I had a teacher, my bass teacher, and then 10 years later, I was the fucking house band at the same stage. And I really felt that was a big, awesome thing. It's not, or anything. It's not impressive, but I felt at the time, I was like, yeah, man, I'm fucking getting there, you know? And the singer for Octababy, went to New York City, and he had tried out at one point to be in Bad Brains, which was interesting because he was Caucasian, and they definitely didn't go for that, but he was trying, and that's cool. And that's actually in my book, which is never going to be finished, obviously, but if it does get finished, buy that shit, and maybe we'll make an audio companion. I was thinking in my brain that I could just read the book and into the microphone, and we'll just release an audio companion with it, along with the record Weapons by Starscream, which is actually getting mixed right now, so it's exciting. Anyway, that song was called Too Much to Take, and hopefully you didn't despise it. Now, I was thinking, if it's too redundant and it's too fucked up for you as you listen to this, it's a podcast, so you can just skip along. You're not forced to sit through the whole song. I don't know, man. This cringeworthy episode, the memory lane, if you will. So I took that tune, and I go to Roosevelt Mall with Dusty, like I was saying before, and the first guy I think we met is Chris Frakes. Really nice guy. He had long hair, which to me was the coolest fucking thing in the world because I went to a Catholic high school and I had to like have my hair really fucking short. And so this guy has awesome hair and he's cool and he's wearing a flannel and like his, I was like, so who's your favorite band? Like I'm interviewing people, like I'm somebody. I'm like, oh, well, here's my demo. Listen to my demo tape. And then I'm going to give you a series of questions and we can discuss your equipment and your influences before we build a band together. Again, I really thought I was the shit. I wasn't. I was atrocious. And I just, I don't know, man, my entire career, I just kind of assumed control of things. And most of the time, people allowed it, which speaks volumes. But anyway, so anyway, as I crack myself up on my own podcast, speaking to myself, this is the first time I've ever done this. Normally, I have a guest. I didn't know how to do this with a guest. It was just fucking weird. Anyway, here I am, I meet Chris Frakes, and he listens to the tape. He's like, hey, it's not bad. He's like, you know, I can play. We should get some shit together. He's like, let's jam. And I'm like, cool. And I was like, so who's your favorite band? He's like, my favorite band's Megadeth. And I remember that impressing me because I am not, at the time anyway, a Megadeth fan per se. The reason being, I'm a vocalist. And Mustaine, who's great player and a good songwriter, isn't a great singer in any capacity, so they're not my band. But I knew all the history with him and Metallica, and Metallica was fucking huge. Like, the Black Album was so massive at this time in our lives. Not our lives, but everywhere. It was just a huge record. It sold like, you know, 20 million gazillion copies or something. And I remember, oh, I was impressed. That's cool. It's a good musical, musicality. There's a good, like, it was impressive. And then I said, okay, what do you have gear-wise? Like, well, I have like a little combo amp, you know, which all of us did. And he said, I have an Ibanez X. And he didn't know this, but when my bass teacher moved away, I had bought a 1977 Ibanez Iceman off of my teacher because he was a bass player and didn't need it. And I love that guitar. I still have it, ironically enough. It's a different color now, which is a little upsetting, but I just had sold it to someone else. They painted it. And of course I bought it back because I get some money. I'm like, fuck that. That's my first guitar. And I still own it. It's literally 30 feet away from where I'm talking in my office. And I, he had an Ibanez and I had an Ibanez and I didn't know about Gibsons yet. And I didn't understand the gravity or the expense even of, you know, important equipment. But the Ibanez thing was, I was like, all right, man, we're simpatico. Like, you have an Ibanez, I have an Ibanez. Let's fucking get together and do some songs, you know? And we agreed to. And then there was a kid named Joe, and I remember his last name. I don't want to say it on the podcast because it's weird, but his name was Joe. If I was in my junior year of high school, which I think I was at this time, Joe was a sophomore. And Chris was also a junior. And I knew him and I was like, listen, man, I'm going to jam with this guitar player. You know, you have a bass. And he was a really good bass player, actually. And he was like, yeah, come to my house. And he had this beautiful Rickenbacker and he had a drum kit set up and he had a four track. And so I remember literally, and this is in the book, sitting on a bus, a Philadelphia SEPTA bus. It's the 60. And I was going up Allegheny Avenue from Port Richmond into Kensington, which is where Joe lived. And it was like, I'm going to fucking band practice. And I'm listening to the radio and I had my little tiny combo amp. And I think I went to Radio Shack and I bought a microphone and a cable. I think maybe I didn't yet. Maybe we used Joe's microphone, but I had this little tiny amp and I brought my bass just to be on the safe side. Cause you know, I could jam a little. Yeah. Right. And I'm on the 60 and it was like springish. It was like warm evening. It was a school day. And I remember specifically that Let's Get Rocked came on the radio by Def Leppard. And I was like, yeah, this is the beginning. I'm in a fucking band now. That Reign of Terror shit was nothing, man. I'm gonna be in a fucking band. And I was so excited and I felt so fucking alive. And we got there and we set up and me and Chris and Joe jammed. I think we wrote like 3 or 4 tunes, just jamming. You know what I mean? Cause Chris had a bunch of riffs. I had a bunch of like lyrics and I guess melodies just inside me and they came out. And it was a natural, beautiful occurrence. And then Joe was like, yeah, I don't wanna be in a band. And we're like, no, you're so good. And then Chris says, no, man, I know a bass player. And that guy's name was Armand, who I still love today. And it turned out that Armand, who I knew from high school, lived in the same neighborhood as Chris. And a few weeks later, we were literally in Armand's basement playing rock and roll. And I'll never forget this. Like, I'm a control freak, right? Chris invited another guitar player and never told me to our band, right? So I walk in for practice. I probably have my little stupid combo amp and my new microphone and stuff. And there's a guitar player sitting there jamming with Armand, the bass player. And Chris is like, no, dude, it's cool. This guy's really good. His name's Frank. You're going to like him, dude. And I did like him. I loved him. I still love him. He's a great guy. And I fell in love with how they played. And we started to write fucking songs, man. We became a fucking band. So it starts out on January 5th, 91 is the beginning. And then a year later, by the spring of 92, we were like a band. I don't know how that happened, but it did. It finally came to fruition. And is it the next thing? No. On this cassette tape that I'm playing, there's a poem that's I'm gonna play for you, which is cringeworthy and embarrassing, which you will love and laugh at. And then we'll talk a little more. And then we're gonna play the original by a band called Apathy, which no longer exists. And we're gonna keep going. So thank you so much for listening to this cringeworthy episode. Bear with me. We're gonna play the next tune. Thank you.
Delusions of the terror in the garden. Walking, talking, thinking, living. This is what I've started. And I do not care that you were there. This is what you've chosen. Broke my heart, tore me apart, and left my feelings frozen. Paranoid delusions of the terror in the garden. Now I must turn to you, but whenever I think of you, I remember how all your change, nothing ever stays the same. Planet delusions of the terror in the garden.
Well, that's cringeworthy. Yeah, that's me, 15. Was I 16? I think I was still 15, trying to be all deep and introspective of the paranoid delusions of the terror in the garden. And I didn't even know what I was talking about. I was a kid. I didn't experience anything. I had, like, two weird sexual relationships at that point in my life and was just a little grateful to be past them and nobody got pregnant. And now I was trying to build a little rock and roll band and just do what I do. And I don't know, man. It's just, it's fucking weird. Like, to hear 28 years ago on cassette of myself expressing myself, and it's, I don't know, hopefully you remotely enjoyed it. If not, hopefully you laughed and that was cool. But we're already halfway through what would be a normal podcast. We're going to continue along. But like I said, like, out of the ashes of whatever this thing is that I'm playing for you, or maybe the seedlings, we became a band, man. We became a thing. Like, Apathy became my band, and I loved those guys, like, tremendously. Together for years, it felt like, because when you're a kid, if you do something for a year and a half or maybe even 2 years, it's an eternity. And like, we always went to practice and we were always trying, and little relationships would spring up and somebody would get a girlfriend and I would get a girlfriend and then they would be friendly, and it was like a cool dynamic, and it became the social binding of my high school career. Ironically enough, it really spiderwebbed tremendously out into my life. Now, this is a completely different side story, but it's true. I recently met an estranged cousin of mine. I was at the Mayfair Diner with Mangus. Is that how we say it? No, hold on. Wait, Mike, my friend Mike. Magnus, that's what he has his new name. So Magnus and I were out, and it was a day we had done recording of podcast together, and I bought him lunch, and we were just hanging out. And as I'm leaving, this woman says the name I was born with. And I look over, and she is my cousin who I haven't seen in 40 years. for real. And she's like, hey. And I was like, hey. And we hugged. And I sat down, and she had some chemical problems in her life for a while, and she's sober now. And she was with her husband, or maybe not her husband, but her long-term boyfriend. And he was really nice, and he rides Harley, so we discussed that. And I just got to talk to her. Maybe it was like 90 minutes. We just sat in this diner, and we just bullshitted. And it was glorious. And she told me stories and things about my family I didn't know, because that side of the family was estranged. And the whole thing is, her father almost adopted me before, who did adopt me adopted me. Does that make any sense? So her dad was going to adopt me. He was Uncle Billy, and he was my father's brother. And my father's aunt and uncle, which would be my great aunt and uncle, adopted me. But Bill was going to adopt me. And had I done that, I would have grown up in Juniata. And then when high school happened, all of the most important things that happened in my life came from the neighborhood of Juniata, which just boggles my mind. The energy was so strong that I was supposed to be there. It just pulled me back. Literally, like, it was kind of amazing to like hear her story. She's like, no, my dad filed papers and he was going to adopt you. And then my great aunt swooped in and took me, which I'm grateful of. And I love who raised me. They're fucking awesome. And they're no longer with us. And I adore them. But it's just, it could have been so different. It could have been radically different. And I would have been in that same neighborhood. So as like high school was in that neighborhood, that's where I went to North Catholic. It's in Juniata. I met those people. I became friends with those people. My first serious girlfriends from that neighborhood, like for real, like the girl I saw from like 17 to like 20, 21, 20, 17 to 20. That was my first girlfriend, Nicole. And the band Apathy, like that was like the binding of my entire social network was that awesome neighborhood, man. And it was good times. And it all came from Juniata. And I almost grew up there. So even though I didn't grow up there, the energy pulled me back. I think we're going to play the Apathy song, which is called the original now. It's really a car crash and I feel really bad because we were just a shitty fucking teenage band. And I'm off key and I'm like cringing and I'm like, man, you should do better. But it's pretty cool and hopefully you'll enjoy it. So bear with us. Apathy, the original.
What I want.
So yeah. That's Apathy playing a song called The Original. And the timing issues are pretty atrocious. So this is a compilation cassette tape. So I think what might have happened in my fragile little Vex brain is that in January of 91, January 5th to be precise, we do the first ever recording, right? And that's Reign of Terror. And we're like, we're a little band, we're going to be awesome, you know what I mean? And then later on that same year, I go solo, which makes no sense because the band ceased to exist, obviously, because it wasn't really a band. And I made that Too Much to Take recording, which, you know, could be worse, I suppose. It's my first recording ever, like ever, right? So it's not that bad. And then you get to hear us live with Apathy, which was the band that formed in the spring of 92, I guess. Yeah. So it was an interesting year, to say the least. I went from like dreaming about being in a band to like actually getting into an actual band within like a year and a few months, which is a huge quantum leap for a child. I was a teenager, you know what I mean? So yeah, that totally happened. And this has been a podcast of those things. And I was debating, there's more stuff on this cassette tape. And there's like the first ever recording of a band called The Broken, which became Starscream, of a song called Father. And it starts out and the drums are right on meter, right, on the recording. And then the guitar comes in and it's great. And the vocals are so bad. Like, it might be the worst of the three. Like, I started out okay in the beginning. It gets really rough for Apathy. And then by the time we're in The Broken, it's just, the key is like, what's a key? It's just all bad all day. But my understanding is that perhaps that is like the time when we just wrote that song. It's called Father. Ironically enough, about dear old dad, right? Who did not raise me, but not bitter. But yeah, so sonically, it's just a car crash, except the band was much, much better, more developed than I was when I was in Apathy. When we were Apathy, we were kids. If you listen to the beginning of that track, there's like an outtake, which is like metal-ish guitar, which I believe is probably just Frank in his bedroom. And I took that snippet, and then I married it together with a live recording that we did in Armin's mother's basement. And I kind of remember the day this happened. It was like warm. It was like summer-ish or spring-ish. And yeah, played some rock and roll. A song called The Original. About 2 years ago, Apathy performed with us, Starscream, at a place called Freddy's Tavern. And they didn't go, I think they were called Sonogram or something, because they had a different singer at the time than the Apathy lineup, because Apathy is still around. Frank's cousin, who I went to high school with as well, he was a year behind me, another guy named Joey, became the vocalist for Apathy, and they're now called Stellar Belly, and they really are a phenomenal fucking band. Like, the lyrics are great, the songs are great, they're really good. That kid Joey could sing his balls off when he was 15. Like, he could really, really, really sing. Like, he was covering Even Flow by Pearl Jam, things that were just way beyond my comprehension. I was a little stupid punk rock kid, and I was like, man, but I knew he was good. I had no delusions. And when I left, because I was like, I'm going to form my own thing in very dramatic Vex fashion, I might add, they picked him up, and he's still the singer, and it's like 25 years later. Literally, 25 years later, because we're old fucking men. And they're still great. They still play. When they play out, they pack it, man, because they don't play that many times a year anymore. But we've had a little tiny career. I was speaking to Armin about it a little while ago, and he was like, yeah, like, you know, none of us got record deals or anything, but we've had careers. Like, records have been released, and we've toured, and our little piece of rock and roll has been cut out. And now, in this 2019, where we're living, like, the major label record thing's dead. Like, people like Taylor Swift are still massively successful and huge, but that was like a pop artist who transitioned into writing her own music and everything, which is cool. I guess technically she always wrote her own music, but the bottom line is, it's like a rock and roll band just not happening. And then if you listen to Eddie Trunk, who I'm a huge fan of, actually, he's a great broadcaster and he's a smart man. And he used to host that metal show on VH1. And he's still on the radio all the time. And I listen to a lot of his stuff on YouTube because I don't have Sirius XM or the other one and anything in relation. I have to pay service for the radio, but everything's on YouTube. So I'm listening to Eddie Trunk and he's advising. He's like, in 2019, a bunch of Greta Van Fleet, is that what they're called? Greta Van Fleet knockoffs are going to come that are just like ripping off the Zeppelin sound, like guitar, bass, and rock, guitar, bass, and drums, rock and roll, which bodes well for a band like Starscream, except that perhaps that time has passed us because we're not young men, but we can play our balls off and we have a young drummer. I don't know. I don't worry about such things anymore. I'm fortunate enough that I make a little tiny living doing what I do. Live in a comfortable house. I think I'm going through another divorce. So that part sucks, but I will survive it and continue to rock and roll another day. So that's what we're doing, is we're recording this podcast and it's like cringeworthy episode and it goes all the way back to the beginning, like spanning 28 years of recordings. And I kind of feel inclined to try and like play something recent from Starscream, so you're like, no, it got better. Like, we were really bad, but it improved, you know? But it's not about that. If you guys were inclined, you could definitely listen to Starscream. You can Google us. We're everywhere. Our manager, Mike, has gotten us to the point where if you just punch us in Google, like, all the Apple stuff comes up. He got us, our last single was released under Universal Records, so that's everywhere. It's called Destroy Your Pretty Face. None of you bought it. Not that I'm bitter, because there was no promotion behind it, but it's a good little tune. It was recorded by Sony. Standby Records brought us down to Ohio a couple years ago, and they were like, hey, let's record this. And then they didn't sign us because they were afraid of our love. And our manager promptly got it picked up by Universal because Sony recorded it, which is kind of cool. And it's available globally. But the new record, self-financed, self-produced, and all that good stuff, is going to come out real soon. It's called Weapons, featuring a myriad of new material that people have heard or haven't heard. If you go to our concert, you probably heard some of the songs. But some of them you haven't. Like, if they've just never been played before. Like, there's a song called Skin, which is kind of gnarly. And I discussed that actually on a recent podcast with a friend of mine, that the lyrics got pretty dark and weird to kind of parallel what's going on in my life at this time. So anyway, here we go. This is the Vex on Vex podcast. This is episode number 40. I didn't think we'd even get this far into it. 40 weeks, 40 episodes, if you will. And it's 2019, so that's the episode at hand. I really want to thank you guys for listening. Like, it was a weird, cringeworthy episode. I didn't know how it was going to go over. Hopefully you enjoy it. Hopefully it's downloaded. If not, that's okay. No one's going to die. We'll survive. But it's been very interesting, to say the least. We get to visit this bizarre timeline. And I guess I'll go on a little diatribe, and then I'll let you guys go. Like, we were kids, man. We were fucking 15 years old. We didn't comprehend playing. And then there's an audio document of how bad we really were, which is interesting to me, you know? And then you meet an older musician, and he was my bass teacher, and he made me a little tiny demo. And I got to sing on it for the first time, so my voice was out there, and it wasn't atrocious, you know what I mean? And I wasn't bad. I wasn't good, but I wasn't bad, you know? So we worked on that, and then we got into a band, like a real band called Apathy, and I was really proud of it, and it was exciting, and mildly successful in some capacity. I don't know. It was fucking fun. And we met girls, and we got to play rock and roll. And then I left that group. I graduated high school, and I had started college. And I remember calling Armin and Frank. And I think Armin had three-way calling, which in like 1993 is cutting-edge technology that you can call from your house phone to your friend, who then could call someone else. And three of you could have a conversation. I'm like, gentlemen, I'm going to tell you right now, I think I'm leaving the band. You know, we've kind of been growing apart, blah, blah, this whole declaration. And they're like, no, dude, cool, let's stay. Like, we'll work it out. I'm like, no, man, I'm going to go find my own way, man, you know. By that point, Chris Frakes, the founding member of Apathy with me, had left. And he joined a band called Euthanasia. Ironically enough, the drummer in Euthanasia is Johnny Mack, who is currently the drummer of We Are One. I love him to death. He's like one of my best friends on the planet Earth. He was the best man at my last wedding. Like, Johnny Mack's like my brother. And he's the motherfucker who stole my guitar player in high school. I mean, he didn't know me. He didn't know. But Chris Frakes leaves Apathy. Dun, dun, dun. And they joined Euthanasia. And then they opened up for national acts, and they did things. And we were just languishing in the basement trying to get our shit together. We did all right, though. And Chris, he kind of stopped playing, which makes me sad, because he was a really good guitar player. But again, he has a great life. He's doing well by himself. The band of Apathy, who are now called Stellar Belly, are alive and well and thriving and making recordings and doing cool things. I worked on the drummer's roof, I think, last year. Small world stuff, you know. His Mike Skierski, he's the original drummer of Apathy. He's probably the guy on that recording. And then he left for a while, and there was a guy named Frog Dog who played. And that was kind of at the time that I exited, because Frog Dog didn't have the same groove. He was like this death metal drummer, you know what I mean? And we weren't a death metal band in any capacity. We're like a weird hodgepodge rock and roll band. Like, it's weird, because I could hear influence of Ugly Kid Joe in that song. Like, it's not a good recording, and it's not a well crafted song, if you will. But I can hear it. Like, there's like, I don't know, there was an energy to it. There was a vibe. Had we continued along with that lineup, we might have been doing pretty cool stuff. I mean, the fact that we're all still playing music so many years later is kind of a testament in and of itself. Like, 25 years after the fact, we're still a thing. They still play. I still play. I still write records. Like, it's still happening. I don't know. It's an introspective episode on the Vex on Vex podcast, episode number 40. So, I guess in summation, you can find us and all of our podcasts on the Loud and Loaded Network, which is available on the Podbean application on your phone. But the reality of it is, at this point in time, if you just Google Vex on Vex podcast, spelled exactly how it sounds, all the episodes pop up. It's on dozens of platforms. Podcasting is literally becoming a thing. For some reason, we have an audience, which we're very grateful for. I have an idea for upcoming episodes. So we're on episode 40, right? 10 more hours and we're at the 50th mark. Now, I know 52 is a big thing because it's a year in, like your year in episode, you know, but for me, the 50th is always kind of interesting. And when we did the TV Dads Wrestling 50th episode, Johnny Zero and myself, we broke the third wall and we just talked like we weren't in character, and we just explained how the show comes together and how much we fight with each other to like write scripts and the whole thing and production. And it was fun and I loved it. So my goal is on episode number 50, I want to sit down with Robot Phillips, who was the original co-host when we started the Vex on Vex podcast. And the way that happened is he was a fan of the TV Dads Wrestling Federation podcast. And he was like, hey, man, this is really good stuff. And Johnny Zero wasn't available. And I was like, listen, I want to make other shows. I want to do something that's like rock and roll related, life related, just things of that nature where we're not bound to like just we're in character and we're doing wrestling and this other thing. And a friend of mine, actually, his name's Guns. He was a drummer in Starscream for a long time. Guns suggested, he's like, no, man, just do a regular straight up rock and roll show or something. And obviously we didn't stay in that parameter in any capacity. We go off in all directions and we discuss everything. But I want Robot to come back and just sit down and just have a 50th anniversary episode and just talk about nothing, see how his year was. Because we had some stuff and then he had some family stuff and he couldn't really appear in the show anymore, which is cool. You don't own anybody. It's all love, you know, but he's my brother. And I would love to have a conversation with him because we had really fun little things. Like the beginning of the Vex and Vex podcast, if episode 3, we kind of hit our stride, like him and I really, we had like a rhythm going and it was funny and it was fun and I enjoyed it. And I would love to have him in my mind's eye, like in a perfect world for the 50th episode. I would love to sit down and have Robot Phillips and Johnny Zero and Mike Magnus, all of us, four microphones in like, you know, a round table or a square table for that matter, and just talk and shoot the shit and everybody meet everybody, because I don't think they all know each other. Like Robot has never met Johnny. Johnny's never met Mike Magnus. Like these people don't know each other, and their only variation or their joining part is that they were a part of my podcasting life. Johnny Zero's been on here a bunch of times because I would go to record the TV Dads Wrestling podcast and I'd be like, all right, let's have a Kiss episode because he adores Kiss. I'm a mad at Kiss, I guess. I love me some Paul Stanley. I grew up, I was loving Gene Simmons, who's the bass player, but I don't know, man. Like, it's the end of the road, as they're saying it, and they're not going out with Ace in any capacity, which kind of makes me a little sad. I don't think anybody listening cares, though. I don't think Kiss is cutting edge in 2019. They weren't really cutting edge in 96 when they came back. It was just cool nostalgia, you know? Well, that's the theme music for the end of the show. You have survived the cringe-worthy episode. I'm proud of you guys. It was interesting. It was gnarly. And here's Bell Bottom Blues. I love this song. Derek and the Dominoes, man. Thank you guys so much for listening. Seriously, 40 hours of this shit in the can, right? And we're just going to keep going. And hopefully it grows. And I'll tell you, my goal for 2019, and I hate doing that shit, I want to get a sponsor for the Vex on Vex podcast. So if you're listening and you want me to hawk your products, like Focusrite recording equipment or the Studio Machine, I'm sorry, the Studio Microphone Company, I don't know. If you want me to push your shit, let me push your shit. And give me a check, goddammit. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. We love you guys. This is the Vex on Vex podcast, and this is VexX telling you to stay frosty.